What is up, you guys? Welcome to another episode of the Dear Universe. It's me, podcast. I swear to you, the minute I hit record, I'm like, I'm a singer. I should sing in my intro. But you are all very lucky that I'm not doing that. So if my voice does not sound familiar to you, I want to welcome you to the show. I'm so happy that you're here. I would love to connect with you and hear what you want to hear as a new listener. So be sure to follow me on Instagram. If you are brand new to the show, my Instagram is in the episode description. If my voice does sound familiar to you, welcome back. And thank you for being here, as always, for these very illuminating conversations. That's my favorite word today, is illuminating, by the way. I also made sure it was in the title of today's episode. So wherever you are listening, Apple or Spotify or Anchor, be sure to subscribe, because by subscribing, you're really joining the super cool club where you hear about an episode the moment it goes live. Number two, if you are listening on Apple Podcasts and you like what you're hearing, I would love for you to leave a review or a rating. This really helps me to ensure that I'm on the right track, that I'm putting out content that you are just living for, because this is a community. So let me know how you're feeling. I want to make sure that we are all feeling good and vibing here on the Dear Universe, It's Me podcast. So today's guest, I really don't know where to start. On today's show, we have my dad. And I'm very grateful and honored that he was comfortable doing an episode with me. My dad is a retired physician. He retired from medicine in, I think, September. He is someone who I've looked up to my entire life. I gave him this little plaque before I moved to Arizona, and it said, if you don't have a hero, you haven't met my dad. Something to that effect. Point being, my dad is my hero, and my dad is someone my whole life that I've looked up to. He is someone who has inspired me my entire life. I feel deeply connected to him on a soul level. I would call him one of my best friends, and even though he's still my dad, I'm very grateful that that transition has happened as an adult, and his whole life has been around healing people. I think a lot of times when we talk about doctors and physicians, we definitely don't think of them as healers, but my dad has helped so many people in his life that I would consider him a healer, and he would refer to himself that way as well. And his spiritual journey has been shaped because of several life-death experiences that he has had where he should have lost his life and his guardian angel saved him. And if you are thinking, what in the actual hell, I want you to keep listening, and I want you to listen to the entire episode and then tell me how you're feeling. Send me a message on Instagram, because you guys, my dad has experienced things that are unexplainable, and they have pushed him to fulfill his life purpose. And he really feels like he has fulfilled his life purpose. And this was because he listened to signs throughout his life that were telling him what he was meant to do in this world. And even though he's retired, he's rediscovering a new purpose. So we just had a fruitful, amazing conversation around that and about his life. And I hope it leaves you feeling inspired or wondering more about your purpose, or maybe wanting to think a little bit deeper about some experiences you've had in your own life. So as I'm on my spiritual journey, this conversation helped me to ground and think about what my purpose is and feel inspired by someone in my life who has felt very, very substantial things in this world. So Dad, if you're listening, thank you. I love you so much. I'm so grateful that you came on the podcast. I think you're amazing. You inspire me. I brag about you to my friends. I just want to be like you when I'm your age. You're one of my favorite people. So let's go ahead and do something that we do every time. Oh, I forgot to say. Jenny fashion, forgot to say something. We did not do an Instagram question today. So normally on the podcast, we will ask a question on Instagram and then answer it at the end of an episode. But I really wanted to hold space for my dad today in this episode. He is used to giving lectures at medical conferences. And so this was a different format for him. He was just being himself. So I wanted to hold space for that. So we will get back to Instagram questions in next week's episode. However, y'all know what we got to do before we jump in. We got to breathe. So you guys, today in this meditation, we're going to keep our eyes open, which I know is new. We normally shut our eyes. So as usual, wherever you are, start to find a comfortable seat, or if you're standing, rooted through your heels. If you're driving, obviously, just tune into your breath. Be safe on the road. But I want you to keep your eyes open and find a focal point in your room that you can focus on for the next 30 seconds to a minute. In yoga, we call this your drishti. So finding that focal point where kind of everything outside of it can become a little bit fuzzy. It's a meditation where your eyes are open and you're aware, but you're still focusing on your breath. So take a deep breath in and just let it out however feels good to you. And slowly start to rock your neck back and forth. Maybe you shrug your shoulders and then release them back down. Again, lowering your left ear towards your left shoulder and then your right ear towards your right shoulder. And then come on back and find your drishti, that focal point in the room. Relaxing your shoulders, relax your jaw. On your next exhale, release all of the air out of your lungs. And start to slowly take a deep breath in through your nose. Feeling your belly balloon, lungs expand. Create space for yourself today. Create love for yourself. Hold this breath at the top. Exhale through your nose. Beautiful. You might have even heard an oceanic quality or sound to your breath. So taking one more breath together in through your nose. And out through your nose. Your pranayama ujjayi breath, your life force. When we breathe this way, it relaxes our vagus nerve, our nervous system, and it ultimately just calms us and connects us with who we are. And now you can release yourself from that focal point in the room, maybe blink a few times. And let's go ahead and jump into this episode where you get to meet my dad. You guys, I'm so excited. I have goosebumps. If you listened to episode 3, when we talk about being an empath, I talked about how I get goosebumps a lot. Right now is no exception. So let's go ahead and jump into it. My dad is one of the people in this world I respect and love and honor the most. So let's go. You're my dad. And this is a little bit more of a formal format, but I don't want it to feel that way. So yeah, for people listening, we are not in person. This is all virtual. So technology is allowing us to do that. But welcome to your first podcast. How do you feel?
It feels a little bit weird, but it's fun.
Yeah.
I'm ready to share some stories.
Yeah, you have some good ones. That's why I wanted to have you on, specifically things around spirituality or just weird shit happening in your life that doesn't have an explanation. And because you're a doctor and you come from a science background, I think it'd be interesting to hear your life experience in that way. So I know that has been your identity, but if you want to introduce yourself and just share anything that you would want people to know about you that might give some context before we jump into your stories around guardian angels.
Well, I'm obviously your dad, and I have been all year of your life. I'm now 58. I grew up in upstate New York, went to school in Ohio, residency and training in Texas, and then moved to East Texas and then to Seattle 18 years ago. So you're right. I've been a physician for, I don't even know how many years. I got to think about it, 30 something years. And I've been a scientist my entire life, but now I'm morphing into a new journey as a wildlife photographer now that I've retired.
Yeah, and I'll plug his Instagram in the episode description so you guys can follow him. But growing up with you, I know that we had some weird experiences happen in the house we lived in Texas. And as I got older, I felt more connected to your mom, who I talked about in episodes 1, 2, and 3. And obviously she's passed away, but I know that you feel very connected to her in some ways too. So I don't know if you have felt a sense of life purpose that's connected to your mom or anything metaphysical. I know your best friend, Rob Wright, that whole story is very unique and interesting. So what is your open, vulnerable opinion on spirituality and all things in that sense? And don't hold back, because this podcast is all about being real. So don't feel afraid.
Well, I would guess I would say that initially I was anti-spirituality and being a hardcore scientist and working in the physical world in the realm of the human body. I've always been biased towards that, but I have had several personal experiences that made me believe that there's something much greater than us. And I'm just not talking God, I'm talking a lot of other opportunities in life to believe that we are minuscule in this universe in comparison to what's out there. So I definitely have some of those experiences that shifted my thinking about life and my role in it.
Did you have anything as a kid that happened to you? Because I know grandma was really spiritual. Did she push you to do anything to help you try to tap into connecting more to yourself? Because you decided that you wanted to become a physician when you went to college. So when you were a kid, did she do anything that made you kind of go, that's interesting? Or
yeah, there was several things before college, actually, that you may or may not be aware of. So actually, my mom was a nurse, and my life as a physician started the day I was born. My mother wanted me to be a nurse. I mean, not a nurse, a physician, because she thought physicians were highly respected, as they were more so in that time, as opposed to now. However, she wanted me to be a doctor very badly. So she wanted me to be Paul, because she named a lot of her children after disciples. But she wanted me to be a physician, she made my middle name Henry. And our last name is Dreyfus. So I'm a PhD when I came out of the womb. I was already a doctor. Yeah, that's the genesis of PhD. She always got me involved in science ever since I can remember. So it was not a choice. It was sort of a destiny that she molded for me, introduced me to physicians at a young age, had me work in the hospital as my first job, volunteered when I was 14. And she would always involve me in her nursing. Specifically, she was a camp counselor and a nurse and was acting more like a physician. So I got to do a lot of things when I was 14 that I would not normally be exposed to in the nursing office of the camp that we worked at. So, yeah.
So as you became an adult, I remember as a kid, there was one experience in particular where I think you probably could have lost your life and maybe should have. But for some reason, you were saved, and you've had a few interesting things happen in your life that have been fairly weird, in the sense that it was a near-death experience where you absolutely shouldn't be here, but something beyond said, nope, we're going to keep you here. So I don't know if you want to share any of that, if there's anything else you want to talk about before sharing those experiences, because that's really the reason I wanted to have you on, is because you've had some weird stuff happen that's unexplainable. And I think it's pushed you to continue to be here and fulfill your life purpose, whatever you feel like that is.
Well, I think I'll back up and share a few more stories about my upbringing before I became a physician and had some of these near-death experiences. So in regards to being exposed to the metaphysical, I remember I was somewhere around 12 or 13 years old, and I had no experience with any of this. We were brought up in a very hardcore Lutheran Christian family and followed those belief systems, but I wasn't exposed to anything more than a Ouija board. But my mom had actually lost her wedding ring, and she was very, very upset that she lost her ring. And she, for several months, was looking for the ring, and she couldn't find it. And she said, I'm going to go to a medium I heard about and see if the medium can help me find my ring. And I'm under the belief at that time, that's a bunch of crap, but if you want to waste your money, go for it. Go for it, Mom. I really don't care. Mom came home from the medium and said, I know where my ring is, according to the medium. Let's go look. And the medium had told her that she took her ring off and tried to put it in the top of the dresser she always puts it in. There's a little bowl that she would put it in, but it was very late and she was tired, and it flipped off the back of the bowl and went behind the dresser. Now, my mom thought that might have happened and looked under the dresser, around the dresser, in the floor, and never found it. But the medium said, no, the backing of the dresser is off about an inch, and the ring actually fell behind the dresser inside that backing. And if you take the backing off, the ring will be at the bottom drawer in the dresser. So we did that, and there was the ring. And voila, I believe there was more to this life than just the black and white.
There's no way that woman could have known that unless she had came to your house. And I've had my own medium reading before, which I told you and Mom about. And that really, really made me triple confirm that there is something out there. And that'll be a different episode. But
yeah,
interesting. I wonder what pushed her to go to see a medium, because she was a nurse. She was in the medical field, too.
She was, but her mother, my grandmother, gave her the idea, and my grandmother was very open-minded, and my grandmother had experiences with the afterlife, as did my mother, I learned later on during my upbringing. And then I had my first experience with the afterlife shared at the same time with my mother, and it was actually that time in my life was the genesis not only of my belief in the afterlife, but my desire to become a physician. So my grandfather, who I had an extremely close relationship with because my father was absent in my upbringing, but my grandfather was front and center. So he was my dad as far as I was concerned. He ended up getting colon cancer and it was metastatic. And my mother, being the nurse, took care of him and he essentially died in our home. And I watched him decay month by month. And he ended up being in a hospital bed in the room across from mine. Like, we converted the room. And he was there. And he also was a concert organist, nationally known, an amazing organist. So he was all about music and playing music. So when the chemotherapy affected his nervous system to the point that he couldn't play, it became very sad for him. And all he could do was tap his wedding ring on the metal bar of the hospital bed. And he would do it repeatedly in the other room. And he lost the ability to play more impressive notes, shall we say, on the hospital bed. And it came down to, in the last week of his life, repeatedly, just during all waking hours, he would go dun dun da dun 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 da dun with the wedding ring. But he never would do the dun dun da dun dun. It was just dun dun da dun, on and on and on. So actually, when he passed, my mother and I had not converted the room back over for her to go back into her old bedroom where he was, which still felt like death, and she didn't want to be there. So she was in my room with me, and there was bunk beds, and I was on the top bunk, and my mom was on the bottom bunk. And around 2 o'clock in the morning, we were both sound asleep, and all of a sudden in the other room, loud as you could possibly imagine, we heard dun 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 dun. And I'm like,
and he had passed at this point.
He had passed 3 days ago. And I thought I was just dreaming that Grandpa was still in the other room. And I looked down at my mom from the top bunk, and she looked up at me from the bottom bunk. We both said at the same time, "Did you hear Grandpa?" And I said, "Yes." And then in the other room, even louder, we heard dun 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 dum.
That last note that he never
played. Correct. And for me and my mom, that was the moment we knew he was happy.
I'm sorry that I brought it up. I don't like to see you cry.
I'm not crying. Just sound like it. However, I was unable to help my grandfather during all of that time he was dying and the pain he was suffering from. So that's when I decided the scientist in me had to become a healer, and I had to make up for my inability to heal my grandfather. So I became a physician.
Wow. I don't think I knew that, actually, that there was an intersection between that experience and you wanting to be a doctor. Yeah, I think it's good that you've, you know, those experiences kind of woke you up to the fact that there's other things out there that exist, and maybe your life purpose was being a healer. I know I've been told similar things from the people I've talked to that are in the mediumship realm, so that's fascinating.
Yeah, no, it didn't unfortunately stop there. I wish it did, because these are very emotional experiences. I suspect they are for anyone.
My mom. You went to other countries. Yeah, I don't know if you want to share, jump into your Peru story, but man, there's some crazy stuff that happened.
Yeah, I think I'll share one more story about my introduction to spirituality and the afterlife. Then I'll jump into the meat of the story, so to speak. But
yeah, sorry, I'm just so excited for you to talk about it.
So my mom was, like I said, very spiritual and believed in everything. And I think she passed some of that empathic ability on to both of us, more so likely you. However, she told me that when she would pass, that she would do everything in her power to also do a grandfather on me, to let me know that she was now happy, that she now had ascended, and for me not to worry about her. So when she died, it was, again, several days afterwards, middle of the night, I was asleep. All of a sudden, I woke up and I couldn't believe what I heard. It sounded like there was a waterfall in my room where I was sleeping, a really, really loud waterfall. And I couldn't wake my wife up to say, "Do you hear that? Do you hear that?" But it didn't stop. And I looked around and I just felt my mother's presence in the waterfall. And then it went away. The interesting part is my mother lost her ability to hike. She had me hiking mountains when I was 6 years old and on. But as she got older and got other problems, she lost her ability to be able to hike. And she always lived through my pictures and experiences and little cell phone videos of hikes. And she always wanted to be under a waterfall again. That's one thing she missed. So for me, that was the sign that she was okay.
And to create a connection too for people listening, when I had a medium reading, she brought up waterfalls and she said, you have to ask your dad if a waterfall means anything to him. Cause it wasn't registering with me. And so when I called you and told you that she had said waterfall, that was kind of an aha moment because that was a big, big thing for you when you woke up and heard the waterfall. It was her sign. So that came through in my life too, but
very interesting. I know.
Yeah. So when you were younger, I know you traveled around the world a lot and you were in, I think Peru was your first life-death experience that woke you up.
Yeah, that was a pretty crazy thing. So I was actually in 1989. I was between medical school and internship. I had a month off and I decided to go to Peru. I always wanted to experience the South American culture. But it was also a very scary time to go to Peru, and many people didn't want to go with me, so I ended up going alone. That was a time during the cocaine wars and the harvest of the cocaine, and there was a group of, they call them guerrillas or terrorists, called the Sendero Luminoso, that were in Peru that were well known for, if you were in the wrong part of the country and you were American, it wasn't uncommon that they would kill you just because you were American. So
that
the state,
didn't scare you at all traveling there?
I was young and full of more testosterone and piss and vinegar than I have now. So I was not afraid.
You just wanted to get out and see something
different. I needed to get away from school, needed to really go deep and dark and really have an adventure. I've always had the adventurous soul. So I wanted a real adventure, and I got it in Peru in 1989. That's for certain. However, I ended up, you know, following the State Department recommendations of what part of the country to go to and not go to stay safe. But I did make a slight mistake on one part of my journey, and I ended up in an unsafe part of the country without knowing it. And I was in a very remote section in the mountains, and it's out of the books that you see a bus full of people inside, chickens hanging out the window, goats on the roof, luggage everywhere, a bus barely able to move, tipping to the side. And that's where I ended up, trying to catch that bus out of this dirtbag town in the middle of the high Peruvian mountains. And it was only one bus that came a day, and I was stuck there and I was waiting for the bus. So this bus showed up, and of course, there's no room to get on the bus. I was like, no, I'm getting on the bus. I'm not staying here. I'm getting out of this dirtbag town. So I ended up hopping on the back of the bus on the fender, and the back door of the bus was not even existent, and people were just packed in there. So I decided I'm just going to push myself into the bus like everybody else and get in the bus. So I'm pushing people, trying to get off the bumper as the bus is speeding up. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this old lady with the most intense eyes just came out of nowhere in front of me and looked at me. And I don't even know where she appeared from. And she looked at me and strongly she said, no. And she pushed me off the bus. And I fell off the bus to the ground on my backpack. And the bus is taking off. And I'm stuck in this dirtbag town for another day. And I'm like,
and I'm going to interrupt because at the time you were probably pissed. You were like, great, I'm stuck here. I was supposed to be on the bus. And this mean lady who I don't know pushed me off.
Exactly. Where this came from, I had no idea. I didn't make too much of it, except that I was pissed off at this old lady who didn't seemingly like me. So I end up the next day getting on the bus. I got to my next destination, and this was before cell phones, mind you, and internet. And it was finally 2 weeks later, I was able to get to a cell phone and make a collect call to my mother because she wanted me to check in with her when I could. And I got on the phone with mom, and she goes, oh my God, I'm so happy you're alive. I go, alive? Of course I'm alive. She goes, no. 2 weeks ago, and she told me what time, and it converted to her time zone, I was awakened in my sleep that you were at risk of dying and you were in extreme danger, and that I had no more understanding of the event, and I didn't know what happened to you. And I'm, tell me what happened that day. I looked in my journal and I told her. She goes, Paul, that was your guardian angel pushing you off the bus. Aggressively. She goes, I got on the news. Do you know what happened that day to that bus? The Sendero Luminoso, 10 miles down the road from where you were, supposed to be on that bus, killed all 14 Americans on that bus.
Wow.
You were saved.
You were, if you had stayed on that bus and some, I guess, guardian angel didn't push you off, you wouldn't be here. And therefore, really, I wouldn't be here.
Yeah, correct. So I was like, okay, this happened for a reason.
That gives you goosebumps. Yeah.
Oh no, just reliving it gives me goosebumps. Why was I saved? Why was my guardian angel there? What is my purpose? Why am I unique that I was saved when all the other Americans died? And it makes you really reflect, and it gave me more pause to say, well, my path as a physician may be correct. Maybe I'm destined to do something more important than just take care of myself or be myself. So it inspired me to be even a better physician, even though I was very early in my training.
It could be, and I don't know much about guardian angels. I just know your stories, but it could be possible that that happened because it was a reminder from the universe or whoever you believe in that you're meant to stay here longer. Because we all die when we're meant to. I believe that too. So all of these experiences have been a reminder that you're here for a reason and to continue doing what you're doing. So what happened after that trip?
I started my internship full force, and that was a four-year internship residency. And then I got out and moved to East Texas to start my first clinical practice. And I was super motivated in the realm of not only being a physician, but also I wanted to do much more than just be your average doctor in the trenches. So I actually took my scientific background to the next level and my ability to have a higher purpose, which I believe was evidenced by being saved. And I started going full force into doing many, many other things in my life within the world of medicine, which included, teaching fellows, teaching courses, conferences. I had multiple society positions, leadership positions, performed over 35 basic science studies that we published. I helped write standards, review books, work with insurance companies to set up coverage guidelines. I worked as an advocate for my patients at a state level and a national level, was a expert witness and consultant to multiple entities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, i.e. overachiever. And I did what my mom had always told me to do. Those two dictums to my life that I was brought up and hopefully I passed on to you, which is one, quote, do good, which was her dying words to me, do good, which that meant do the most you can within the abilities and gifts you were given to help humanity in a positive way. Mm-hmm. Two, do not let the bastards win. That was her mm-hmm. favorite. So everything I did in my medical world was to do good, advance science, help humanity more than just take care of one patient at a time in front of me. And then the people that are doing it for the wrong reason, for power or for money, that are unethical, reveal who they are and take them out scientifically. And that's what I did with my entire career. Follow my mom's two dictums in life.
You did do that too. I remember you went a few times to stand up for good doctors when there was bad doctors that were doing it for wealth and greed, and you really represented the good part of physicians. And I think there's a lot of people out there that think a certain thing about doctors and what it means and wealth, but you really did it because of a purpose. And I think that's impactful and important to say.
Everything I did was about establishing integrity in my field, essentially. So for better or for worse, unfortunately, I guess my guardian angel or the higher powers that be thought that I needed a few more signals, that I needed to continue to be motivated to do good. Mm-hmm. So
you did have more signals. Yeah. One of them I was alive for.
Yeah, yes. Two of them, actually. So the second one was when we were living in Tyler, Texas. It was a rainy day and I was coming home from work, and I was coming over this railroad trestle, and another car came out of nowhere in my lane, and I had to avert him, and then I had to recorrect not to leave the road. And when I recorrected, the car spun out, and when it spun out, I was going backwards about 45 miles an hour hydroplaning, and then the car flipped over I don't know how many times, took out an iron gated fence, and then I was sort of upside down, sideways in my car, and I landed with the cell phone in my hand. Everybody says, oh, you had the cell phone, you were texting, that's why you got in the car accident. No. It was not that way. It landed in my hand. And when that cell phone landed in my hand, I called 911. And when I called 911, God knows how it happened, but it also dialed my wife. at the same time it dialed 911, and she could hear the 911 call but couldn't talk to the phone, or either one of us could hear her. So she came to the location the same time the fire truck came to extract me from the vehicle. And
that was impossible that that can happen. You couldn't, if you're upside down in a car and your phone happens to land in your hand by chance, or what, you know, whatever you think it might be, there's no way you could have done a three-way call to also call 911 and mom at the same time. Something made mom receive that phone call at home.
Yeah, this was flip phone. This was not iPhone with three-way call merging. This was old days. It didn't even exist. So it's even more interesting, right, that it happened. So that was just, okay, I'm given another chance. It's sort of like another clue to keep going, to keep pursuing. You're not done yet. It's I took it.
Did that register at the time, or did it take you a while because you were in shock to realize? And was your mom alive when this happened? She was still.
My mom was still alive.
Yeah,
and grandma was still alive. She again, of course, said, "Well, Paul, you know that was your guardian angel again, giving you another clue. Keep doing good. Keep not letting the bastards win."
Yeah, between that and the thing in Peru. You might not have been around.
Well, yeah, that one was bizarre because the car, I'm not sure if the car saved me or my mom's advice saved me. My mom was a trauma nurse, and she was always up coming home from the hospital with stories of another car accident. She was always upset that the drunk bastards never got injured, but all the nice people got severely injured or died. And she always said, "You know why the drunk bastards never get an injury in these accidents, right?" And I go, "No." She goes, "Because they're ragdolls. They don't fight the energy of the car rolling. They just fly around because they're drunk." So she goes, "If you know you're going to get in an accident and you know it's going to happen, play drunk, play ragdoll, let all your muscle groups go limp and don't fight it, and you'll be fine." And bizarrely, that's what happened.
So after that happened, and can you hear Kobe meowing?
Just a little bit.
I had to close the door on my cat. After that happened in Texas with the car accident, did that change how you live your life at all?
It continued to help me realize the fragility of life. You think when you're young, you're indestructible, and you don't quite understand that every day should be cherished and treasured. But it did give me a little more understanding of that, despite the understanding that I'm saved once again. Re-questioning, why am I saved? Why am I here? Why am I special? Mm-hmm. So I wish the higher entities would have stopped there, but I had one more experience in Bolivia, and I don't know what it is with South America, but I haven't been back since this last event happened in 1996.
And now I'm talking about wanting to go to Peru. You're like, I don't know.
Well, I think I'll be a little more careful where we go if we do go. But yeah, and I was in Bolivia, and you were 7 or 8 years old, roughly. And I was again in the high mountains on a 50-mile trek, looking for old Inca runes in this very, very spiritual section of Bolivia. And we landed at 14,000 feet, the highest airport in the world, commercial airport. And then we went up to 18,000 feet. And this was within 2 days of coming from Texas, which was stupid, but I had very little time from my busy practice not to be able to acclimate. So get to 18,000 feet and we start hiking, and it was about an hour and a half in, I got serious altitude sickness, which then culminated secondarily in eating a bad ham sandwich. And I had altitude sickness compounded by GI sickness, which culminated in, and I'll spare the listeners terrible graphic details from a physician, but let's just say water was coming out of both ends constantly and continuously for about 12 hours. And it was also 34 degrees and raining. And the guides that we were with were arguing whether I should be put on a donkey and taken to the hospital. And they decided that it didn't matter. I'd die either way. So they would just wait and see what things look like in the morning and decide how they would send me on. And I thought I was hallucinating. I was hypothermic. I had barfed and pooped over all my clothes in my tent. Nobody would sleep. It was horrendous. So and I really thought I was going to die.
What was your mindset like? Because I think sometimes when I'm in situations where I'm really sick or I don't feel good, I try to go into a meditative state a little bit or talk to talk to grandma, for example, or someone who I believe is in the universe or a higher power and ask for healing and things like that. But I don't know that you've ever been quote unquote spiritual in that way. It's just kind of been a conflicting thing in your mind that, yeah, this could be real. But so what were you feeling when you were super sick and they were telling you you were going to die?
So I'm not sure you even know this part of the story, but I was in complete tetany, which means all my muscle groups were contracting from my metabolic imbalances. I couldn't even move, and I was vomiting, and I was defecating, I was hallucinating. It was horrendous, and I was coming in and out of consciousness. Now, having had the first two experiences, at this point in time, I thought directly to God and my guardian angel, and I said, please, I'm not done. I can do more good for this world. I've got more in me. I can do something else dramatic as a physician. I have more energy. Please let me live. You let me live, I will do more than anybody ever thought I could do. As much as I can handle without jeopardizing my own health. If you save me just one last time, please, third time's a charm. And that was my last memory. And then I woke up 5 hours later, I was alive. And I said, again, I'll be good to my promise. And it took me a long time to recover from that evening. And thank goodness, I've had no more experiences like this. So maybe I've completed what I was destined to do. Mm-hmm. That's how I view it.
That's one way to look at it. When you woke up after being super sick, after those 5 hours, did you feel physically completely fine? Or was it just kind of a realization that you survived? You were granted another opportunity?
Oh, no. It was... I should have died from dehydration and metabolic imbalances and electrolyte imbalances. I actually couldn't stand and walk on my own. They came to get me and they had to lift me and drag me over. And I was getting dizzy because I was so hype. I was hypotensive and so dehydrated. I'll never forget it. I actually drank 10 liters of tea. 10 liters of tea that day before I peed the first little bit of concentrated tea.
You were really dehydrated.
Yeah. And I was cramping while I was trying to walk for the first day. It was the worst I've ever felt in my life. And I had to continue to push on. I didn't want to go out on the donkey. I wanted to finish the journey, which I'm glad I did because I had many other remarkably wonderful experiences that weren't filled with strife, but were very helpful for me to continue to expand as an individual. So yeah, I really thought I was going to die that evening.
So do you feel like out of those three experiences, there was one that was more profound for you in terms of realizing that you had a guardian angel, something else exists besides just the understanding of science and medicine? Or was there a moment that it clicked for you and you integrated this experience into your everyday life actively and consciously?
I would actually say that my experience in Peru was probably my bigger belief that there was a guardian angel, because not only did that woman appear out of nowhere, literally, but my mother also received a message from that same angel that I was in jeopardy. So I don't understand the connection of how my mother could have appreciated that happened to me unless there was an intervening force or entity. So I have no other way to explain that.
Yeah, no, I don't think there is another way to explain it. And I think it's important for people to listen and hear too, because if someone has lived their life feeling like maybe they're a skeptic, and I know several in my life, they've never had an experience that was unexplainable, or maybe they haven't even opened up their heart to discover what their purpose is in life. It's hard to understand if you haven't experienced that. You know, I think me doing this podcast is a little bit of the same thing you talked about with healing and having a message being given to you, because even though I'm not a celebrity, I'm not an expert in anything, I'm an expert in my own experience. And by talking about my own experiences and yours, for example, people can relate and therefore feel like they're heard, and maybe they want to change their own lives too. So it's all unexplainable, and it's part of who we are.
I strongly believe, for better or for worse, as do many indigenous peoples, shall I say, that we all have a predestiny, that we are born into our purpose. The problem is most people don't understand what their purpose is. They're not open to that discovery process, or they fight their real purpose. They're led down the wrong path by greed or by self-indulgence, and they fight what their real purpose is, and they're torn their entire life. They're depressed. They're anxious. They enter abusive relationships. They enter into alcoholism because they're fighting who they really are. I've known people that have worked their entire life to make money, and their health suffers because they're going down a path, but it's not who they really are. And then when they retire, they finally are open to realizing who they are. And then they do go down a new life journey. And I've seen people go from sick, decrepit looking individuals to youthful, spirited individuals because they finally open themselves up to who they were meant to be. And it's usually almost always a purpose that does not tie to money, is what I've seen in my lifetime.
I completely agree. There's a lot of people in my life who they're so work focused and all they do is work. They just want to be successful. They want to make money. They want to be a president of something. And there are good people like my friend Tyler, who's very, very work oriented, but his purpose with his work is to help people. That's his calling. So he works hard because he knows he can help people. That's different than people who work hard because they want to be super loaded and have a boat or, you know, whatever it might be. I think you're right. I don't think our purpose is ever tied to money, even though we need to be financially stable to survive. The perfect intersection or tandem of that would be your purpose is your job. Your income is doing something that aligns with your purpose. And that's what the medium I talked to said too. And she said, here are four things I think are your life purpose. And you need to be happy. You have to be doing one of these as your job. You're never going to be happy doing a 9-to-5 everyday desk job. That's not your purpose in life. So I think you're right.
Well, and my purpose in life that I feel I've already accomplished, at least in regards to my first purpose, all of what I mentioned, the research, the teaching, the scientific publications, the advocacy, blah, 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 all of that work, I never made 1 cent off of. I did all of that after my normal 60-hour work week because I was passionate about my purpose, and my purpose was never compensated, ever. So, and people couldn't understand, why are you doing so much extra work when you're not making any money? My father, your grandfather, couldn't understand why I would do anything for free because he was guided by money and power.
I don't think he ever tapped into his purpose I think he was I think you're right.
Yeah. So it boils back to, I had a mentor, a neurologist, when I was my first rotation in medical school. I was a third year medical student, and I was very belief that everybody is wonderful and beautiful and is going to do wonderful things, and everybody's altruistic, and it's not nobody's out for themselves. I was very, very optimistic about the world. And I had a very famous neurologist took me under his wing and said, Paul, you're way too idealistic. You need to understand the way the world works. You're not going to believe this when I tell you, but I want you to write this down. I want you to remember it. And I want you to find in your life people that aren't motivated by these three things. And when you find those individuals, they will be your true friends. And it's a little bit bold what I'm going to say, but you told me I could say any words I want. So this famous neurologist said, Paul, there's only three principles that guide most of these people in this world, and most people are shallow, and it's pussy, power, and money. And everything boils down to what people do for power, for money, and for the woman, or potentially the man. But it's usually there's a woman involved in either side of the equation, he said. And you can track it down. And if people's motivation is not about that, and people's motivation is not about themselves, but about others, those are the real people you need to align with.
Well, we're seeing a lot of this right now, I think, with what's happening with COVID and the people who don't want to wear masks, that I can't understand, because it's a human thing. It's helping other people. It's doing something small to benefit other people. So this whole topic of life purpose and healing, and, you know, I think it's relevant right now too, because we're kind of seeing those people who don't care about the betterment of others. They care about themselves for whatever reason.
Yeah, they're the smallest of all individuals.
Yeah.
Makes me very irate, but let's stay positive.
Yeah, well, it makes me irate too, trust me. But so I guess one of my last questions for you would be, how do you, now that you're retired from being a physician, do you feel like you're living out your life purpose as a healer, your words, now outside of being a doctor? And do you feel like you've fulfilled your purpose and you feel whole and enlightened and at peace?
So I'm very at peace with what I accomplished in my professional life. And it culminated in several months before I retired with receiving a Lifetime Achievement Award from a premier medical society I did a lot of work for. And I was honored by my peers to receive that award, which has only been given to a few other individuals. So that was just a complete solidification that I actually did what I was set out to do. And I made a difference in this world. I affected many more people than myself in a positive way through all of my accomplishments that were all done altruistically. So I have complete comfort and closure that I did something special in my life. But I also still consider myself pretty vibrant at age 58. And I do believe that some people are gifted with more than one purpose. So I'm working on finding my second purpose, and things are starting to open up for me within my ability to be a photographer. And to be a lover of nature and be a wildlife photographer. And I'm now entering a different circle of people, organizations, and I think it'll culminate in something else remarkable, but I don't know what that is yet.
I think stuff is opening up to you because you're open to it as well. If you're closed off to experiences, then I don't think things come to you. You have to be open and in tune with yourself and what makes you happy. And I think you are a good representation of that. And you don't have a lot of fear. I think I don't have much fear at all either. I think I get that from you. But you're just not afraid to try something new or to go somewhere on your own or to discover a new purpose. And a lot of people feel fearful because they don't want to fail. But failure is part of being vulnerable. And without risking failure, you can't really find happiness for yourself.
Oh, you never evolve without failure. And I'm more fearful of not taking on new adventures. I'm stifled by the coronavirus. It's making me agitated not to have new adventures and to find my new journey. So I bring the principles that I learned from my medical journey of treating people with kindness, having integrity, not being motivated by money, actually being truly interested in people as an individual and a human being, not as a means to an end. And that's allowed me those principles to meet new people that share the same level of expertise or more than I currently have to help me on my new journey. It's really not hard. Just be a good human being. Don't be the bastard.
Mm-hmm. I'd say that's a good final message. We are running out of time. We're about at 40 minutes, which is perfect. I think you had some huge messages through your stories, and I hope for people listening, you can relate in some way, or if you can't relate, that it opens your mind a little bit to what can happen when you search out your life purpose and listen to what people are telling you. Obviously, in our family, we've been fortunate because we have a lot of, I would say, spiritual or metaphysical experiences with spirit. That is a whole nother topic to discuss. But as long as you're open to your purpose and what the world can offer you, I think it's limitless. So I think you're a good example of that. Do you want to share anything else before we log off here?
The only thing I can say in closing, I would just reiterate what my mother said. It's so simple. It should be a bumper sticker. Just do good.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Amen. So if you guys are listening and you want to follow my dad on Instagram, I'm going to put his Instagram in the episode description. You should really follow him, especially if you like wildlife. If you have any questions for him, you can message him on Instagram or message me. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode. I don't have an Instagram question today. I really just wanted to have an open conversation with my dad about his experiences. So be sure to subscribe if you like this podcast. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts if you have feedback for me. And I think that's it. Thank you for coming on. I know this is different for you.
It's been freaky fun.
Yeah, we could do it again. There's a ton of stories. So that being said, you guys know how we end episodes here on the Dear Universe It's Me podcast. So to anyone listening out there in the universe, please know that the divine light within me sees and honors, cherishes, respects, and loves the divine light within each and every one of you, because you better believe it's there and it is shining bright, my friends. So we will see you on the next episode. Bye.